Welcome today to our interview series with Outstanding Professionals. I'm Stephen Ivoraki, and I'm conducting an exclusive interview with Christian Assad, Chief Medical Officer for Curely, and an internationally award-winning doctor, entrepreneur, and innovator. So, Christian, with your considerable success history in medicine and innovation, thank you for coming in today and sharing your deep experiences with our audience.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Now, Christian, what factors led to your passion for medicine?
I think one of the biggest factors here is the background in my family. My grandfather was a doctor. My father is an interventional cardiologist. And I think since I was a kid, that got basically in my subconscious. I've always been very passionate about technology and more of the geeky side, but when I was growing up and when I had to choose a career, I think medicine was something that I had seen for such a long time that, it was obvious that there was some influence between my grandfather and father to choose that path, which I can honestly say I'm not sure if I would have chosen if that was not being the circumstance, but nevertheless, it's been a very interesting path that I have chosen.
Christian, what lessons can you share as editor of Singularity University FutureMed magazine?
Well, the lessons that I found most significant in this, and it's Singularity University, right now it's called Exponential Med, and it's basically the incorporation of exponential technologies into the way that medicine is practiced. I think at this point in time, it's crucial for medical students, residents, fellows, you name it, any healthcare provider, nurses, physician assistants, to know what the capacity at this point in time is of exponential technologies and where we'll be heading in the next 5 to 10 years. Because if they know that, they can start figuring and imagining ways on how to target particular problems that we face. Not only see it and say it's a good idea how to fix this in this way, but actually have the knowledge and start dreaming on how to create this new paths to fix particular problems. Now, it's topics like tissue engineering, nanotechnology, artificial intelligence, robotics, human augmentation, you name it, all are very important in the way we are practicing medicine. And I think we're going to start seeing this change is being incorporated into healthcare in a quicker pace in the incoming years.
Now, as an interventional cardiologist, what were the drivers for your deep interest in the incorporation of exponential technologies to improve healthcare and in information technology computer sciences as well?
I don't think it has much to do with just being an interventional cardiologist. Interventional cardiologist is just something that I ended up doing because I really enjoy and I like and I and the gratification of saving lives and doing procedures that have direct impact on a patient. And of course, innovation and incorporating exponential technologies into this field will have tremendous potential in the near future if somebody applies it to create the new devices to target particular diseases. Now, my passion for the incorporation of exponential technologies came even before I knew what an exponential technology was. Before becoming or going to the medical career path, I was thinking of doing electrical engineering or IT or some computer science related career. When I chose medicine and I stayed on it, I've always been trying to implement this passion and technologies into my daily life to see how I can improve it, make me more efficient, and not only myself, but improve the lives of patients and other practicing providers. So the interest basically comes from my original passion for technology, and that led me to Singularity University, and where I started learning about everything in more detail of what's coming, I started seeing a bigger picture of where it is and where we're going, and using it my advantage as an interventional cardiologist. Right now, I will be continuing some more training at the Fogarty Institute of Innovation and the Vascular Fellowship in Mountain View, California, where I will aim to start innovating in a quicker pace and get more substantial ideas, devices, gadgets, you name it, out there. And, well, it's been an interesting path, and that's how I see it at this point in time.
Now, can you share your award-winning work with anti-cardiac antibodies and in heart failure and transplants?
Yeah, sure. This was a very interesting project that as after my med school, I went to the Methodist DeBakey Heart Center in Houston, and my mentor here was Dr. Guillermo Torre. And initially what I was looking for is for basically inflammatory markers that would be present in the myocardium or in the heart tissue, if you may. And I was looking for different cytokines, IL-6, TNF, IL-1, and this was being done by different methods, immunohistochemistry, you name it, and using antibodies to detect them. And, well, like many of the discoveries in medicine, one day there was a serendipitous event in which I got another marker or antibody, and this was an anti-human antibody, which was created on a goat. And I used that marker in basically my experiments. And when I started looking at different slides, I noticed something very interesting, and it was a particular staining or glowing due to the immunohistochemistry around the cardiac myocytes. And this was a finding that we had never seen before. And I continued to do this on patients with heart failure, be it ischemic cardiomyopathy or non-ischemic, which basically it just summarizes two different ways of getting heart failure. And what we noticed at this point in time was that 70% of patients that have heart failure have the deposition of this anti-cardiac antibody around their myocytes, while normal hearts don't have it. 0% of the sample that we used or that we tested had this antibody, which was something very interesting. At the end, we were using 100 samples of heart failure versus 40 samples of normal hearts. And we did a comparison, and this has led to ongoing clinical trials and research at the Methodist DeBakey Heart Center, and just was published in the European Heart Journal recently. So it was a very interesting event that occurred, I think, more than 7 years ago, but that finding is still going on, growing stronger, and hopefully it can lead to future medical therapies to either prevent or to help patients with heart failure.
Now, you're doing some pretty amazing work. What is CPR glass and its value?
Well, CPR glass was an interesting experiment, and I say this as an experiment because I got glass, Google Glass, as in my last year as a cardiology fellow before I started interventional training. And my initial goal with glass was to create augmented reality games that would help individuals of different age groups become healthier, basically creating an augmented reality world that would make exercise fun. So obviously, when I started at UAMS here in Little Rock, just like it was in Houston, it has been challenging for me finding individuals that can help me create the idea. Because even though I like technology and I'm familiar with computer sciences, well, coding is a completely different area, which I don't have the time or the knowledge at this point in time to be doing. So what I started doing is imagining different ways that I could actually use glass in my environment, in my setting. Incorporating glass into hospitals was challenging and still is challenging because of multiple legalities and security issues that hospital administrators might be concerned about. So what I wanted to prove was the potential that this has, just not only to the hospital, but to other doctors, which were not very enthusiastic about it, as well as a people, as just a regular individual, and how this could help. So it was pretty simple. Based on the American Heart Association CPR, hands-only CPR ads, and basically, if you go to the YouTube, you'll see one in which they have this music of staying alive, in which it guides the individual how to do proper CPR with hands only to start saving lives. So what I did here is I incorporated basically the technology in class to create an augmented reality mentor, be it someone or somebody that's helping you get CPR. So what CPR that does is once somebody is using glass, it'll basically see if help you detect basically if the patient or the individual is in cardiac arrest, and if he is in cardiac arrest, after it gives you particular instructions, you can start doing the CPR with, if you want or not, the song of staying alive, which basically goes at the rhythm of 108 per minute, and you start giving the compressions. And if you are over 100 or at 100, basically it tells you keep on going. Then we were working on the possibility, and I say we, this comes with Team Evermed, with TechSalut and with Radboud University from Netherlands, with Lucien Engelen. And we were working on basically a way to connect it to 911. And also what we did is we connected it to the largest crowdsourced database of AEDs, which comes from AED for EU, which comes from Lucien Engelen. So what we did here is we created a very simple app that shows the potential of using wearable technology to give the best CPR possible by a bystander. So instead of somebody being a little bit scared or concerned about just going ahead and helping an individual who just had a cardiac arrest, if he goes and activates CPR glass, which is still in development, he can give the best CPR possible. So I think this is the importance is it kind of gives you an understanding of how wearable technology can help an individual save a life. And if you use your imagination, you can start thinking of other ways in which technology like this could be incorporated into your daily life.
Now, what led to your fellowships?
Well, the first one was my basically research fellowship at the Methodist DeBakey Heart Center. This is before residency. And this was just because of timing and the interest that I had in the cardiovascular system. I went there and I did that research, which was very fruitful. Then, then came residency. And after you do medicine, you have to do three more years of training if you want to go to cardiology, which is internal medicine. So that happened. After that, well, then you have three more years of cardiology. And my final goal, which is doing procedures in medicine, because, well, I like all basically the devices, the gadgets. For me, it's very intriguing how we use technology to target particular diseases. And it gave me an idea of how my creativity and imagination could someday lead to improving particular procedures. And that is one of the factors that led me to the interventional world, in addition to the huge gratification of seeing instant changes to patients when an adequate procedure is done. Then after my interventional cardiology fellowship, now I'm going, as I mentioned, to the Fogarty Institute of Innovation and the Endovascular Fellowship, which I'm searching for. I'm doing further advanced training in this field of endovascular training. But in addition, it also mixes with conferences and mentorship on the proper pathways to innovation and call it device application development. And it's one of my passions, basically my incorporation of technology with medicine And this led me to the Fourier Institute, which is basically the best place for me at this point in time to merge my interest and passion to hopefully create something with huge impact in the near future.
Now, what are your current and future research interests and then the value to government, business, society, education, and media?
Well, I mean, as you saw, I have some research which has won prizes, be it in the genetic polymorphisms in heart failure or the anticardiac antibodies. But, well, it's pretty obvious, I guess, to everyone at this point in time that my real passion comes from the incorporation of exponential technologies into medicine. So I recently began some research and publications by applying wearable technology like Google Glass in the setting. And I truly believe that when we start seeing more efficient wearable tech, be it implantable chips, implantable sensors with microfluidics, analyzing live our CBC or BMP, that's gonna be something that's gonna be huge in preventive medicine. So for me, the way I see myself or the area of research that would be intriguing me the most is the incorporation of these different technologies into patient care. Even though I'm an interventional cardiologist and endovascular cardiologist, I'm very interested in ways of preventing people to actually needing the procedure. And I think that technologies out there are maturing and evolving to a point in which hopefully we can use them either to warn or motivate, which is, I think, is the crucial part. Motivating people to become healthier is what needs to happen. So that is where I'm inclining more and more on how to, or where I see myself doing research, because it's an area that I enjoy, it's an area that I understand really well. And I think that the incorporation of wearable technology with maybe some gamification and information to patients, this being incorporated to artificial intelligence, can lead to tremendous results. Well, initially maybe preventing a lot of diseases, maybe preventing hospital admissions. And in the future, well, if somebody already had a procedure, the best way to have the follow-up for that particular case.
Now, let's talk about your work with Curely. What is Curely?
Well, Curely arises from, a little bit of frustration, I guess, from not only doctors, but from patients as well. We all have had the experience, or at least many people in the United States, in which they want to see a doctor, but the clinics are so much overbooked that it gets to be challenging in certain circumstances if you don't have the proper connections. Now, something that doctors really enjoy is giving their advice, speaking with a patient like he was your friend, giving your recommendations on what it is, what could be. Of course, then you might stumble upon the diagnosis and the treatment. But if you see how doctors speak to friends, speak to family members, it's in a different way to how they speak to a patient in their clinic. And it's a huge value to the patient and to the individual having a family doctor, a family friend that's a doctor that can just give straightforward in a conversation their two cents on a particular problem, issue, give a recommendation, do this, do that. I'm not talking about diagnosing, but it's information. And that's what Curely is at this point in stage. It's a way of doctors sharing their knowledge with an individual instead of having him just searching the internet and maybe getting some false advice. So Curely turns into a marketplace for the first time. It's a marketplace in which a doctor can speak to a consumer, speak with him like he was a friend, give the best advice possible, and do this in a matter of minutes. That's what we aim to. We aim for any patient to be able to speak with a doctor anywhere in the world and basically speak with him, get his knowledge, get his information, and then develop a conclusion from that. Now, look, I'm not saying a diagnosis or a treatment at this point in time, but that's because rules, laws will need to change in the future because of how fast exponential technologies are going. I mean, if we see mobile technology right now, the number of connected devices by 2014 exceeds the population. And if we continue at this pace, well, by 2018, you'll have more connected devices to the internet than we have people. So it's pretty obvious that this type of connection and trend, well, it seems kind of obvious that if we have doctors all over the world, well, why cannot they speak with patients all over the world if they want to? And that is what Curie is doing. It's basically a marketplace that uses gamification to help communicate doctors and patients in a more efficient and relaxed manner. This is the initial phase of Curie, but then we have bigger plans once laws and regulations start catching up, hopefully in a quicker pace.
Doc, can you add more about what you think is the value to both doctors and then the value to clients or patients?
Well, the value to doctors, and I'll start with that one. It's I think it's pretty obvious. Let's say you have an excellent doctor that trained abroad. He went to the United States. He went to Spain. He went wherever you want. And then, like a lot of my colleagues and friends, they end up in Mexico. I'm from Mexico, and they're there. So initially, many of these people do not have, or many of these doctors do not have a full clinic, or they have no shows, or people that do not show up. So basically, they have time in their clinic visits in which they might be able to offer their knowledge to a particular individual. In addition, what this does is it enables them to actually also get paid for their service. We have a freemium model. Obviously, we want doctors to be giving their advice to patients in need, which will turn in basically reputation points. But we also want them to be making some money here, which is not wrong. So what happens here is the value to doctors come from being able not only to see patients from a pool in their own country, but being able to see or in their own state or city, wherever you may. It basically opens up to a whole different variety of patients that might need his or her expertise and get knowledge and peace of mind after that conversation that he or she had with a doctor. Now, from the patient standpoint, this is important because, well, we've all seen, and I myself had experiences like this in which we try to make an appointment with a doctor. We have a particular issue or question regarding something that's not so serious, and we try to book a visit. Well, it's no surprise here that many of the doctors already have full clinics, and sometimes you get seen in 3 or 4 weeks for particular problems depending on the severity. If it's too severe, then they ask you to go to the emergency department. So it creates kind of a cumbersome situation. But for patients, if they go online and they would put basically a quote or a bid on a particular issue that they have, so that let's say I want to see a doctor for $20 or something similar around that range, maybe more, maybe less, then doctors around the world who are certified and who have good rating, for example, in our platform, can actually see and have a conversation with this patient and start addressing the issues and the questions that the patient may have. Now, initially, we do not aim to give the patient a particular or individual diagnosis because of obvious reasons, even though many of the doctors would be able to. But due to legalities and regulations, we are basically giving general information and we are establishing a connection between the patient and the doctor to communicate. That's what we're doing. We want the patient to feel that he spoke with somebody, and then after that conversation, he can make up his mind. This is the initial part of Curie, and as technology starts evolving, laws start evolving, more specific or clinic-like situation could happen, but that all depends on how it's evolving. Now, another very interesting point from Kirli is just imagine right now all the doctors, there are approximately 65, some are retiring earlier because they're just tired of how healthcare and the system is going, and they want to retire early. But these doctors already have a 20 or 30 year experience. Their knowledge is tremendous. It's priceless. And Kirli is a way for these doctors to stay in touch with medicine and start practicing it in a way that they did before, in a way like 50 years ago happened, and which they had more time to see a patient, in which their clinics maybe was not flooded as they are at this point in time. So they can give their knowledge to a patient, and instead of just retiring and saying, okay, this is for me, maybe in a weekend they can say, you know what, I want to help a couple of patients, a couple of consumers, and go ahead and have a huge impact on their life. And in many cases, doctors don't really want to retire completely. I mean, they really enjoy what they do. The reason why they start retiring early is because of all the politics that surround the way that they practice medicine. It kind of got polluted a little bit, and there's too much around it that it takes a little bit away about that true passion that they initially felt. And with Kirli, we want to bring that back. We want to establish a friendship, a collaboration, a nice conversation between a doctor and a consumer. And this way, give the consumer the best and prompt advice that could help them. And hopefully in the future, this type of scenario, this type of platform can be transformed into a worldwide clinic in which a doctor in Mexico could be treating a patient in any place in the world. Now, that's what I believe, that's what Kirli believes would be the way to do it, unless, of course, we start messing around with artificial intelligence and other issues, which many people are not very enthusiastic about, but I think it's going to have a huge role. But that goes to another question, I believe.
And it's a really interesting scenario, this marketplace. And what do you see as the medical future for Kirli, especially with your deep research and medical background?
Well, it all depends on where it goes. There's obviously we have different phases, different goals for Kirli. I will not go to the more ambitious and secondary or tertiary phases, but the initial one is I guess the most important one is getting the doctors involved. Doctors at this point in time, they're so busy that considering doing a telemedicine consult is something that just doesn't agree with them. I mean, depending on where you get your statistics from, it goes from 3 to 5% of the doctors practicing telemedicine, depending, of course, on their institution, on their platforms, et cetera, et cetera. But with what we want with Kirli is we want an easygoing conversation happening. If you have some time and you want to speak with a patient and you want to help them out, you can do so in 10 minutes. You can do so in 15 minutes, depending on the type of consult or question. And this is something that Kirli will target initially, is establishing that connection, creating a conversation and exchange of ideas and knowledge between patient and doctor, and basically dealing or getting to a point of either differential diagnosis, possible treatments, possible approaches, possible recommendations, and here I emphasize on possible. Because at this point in time, we are not giving a particular diagnosis. We're not giving a particular prescription. We're not doing many things that would be exactly a telemedicine concept. At this point in time, it's a telehealth concept in which our main goal is to initiate the communication and the relationship via the internet between patients, consumers, if you may, and doctors. And that is the first step. It's getting doctors to embrace the web, to embrace this new type of connection and this new way of offering their advice to patients, in which hopefully in the future they can do it with the incorporation of either wearable technology, different gadgets, different sensor that can monitor saturation, electrocardiograms, microfluidics, and seeing patients' labs. And they will get to a point in which maybe the physical contact will not be as important as all the other data that we would be able to obtain and use in this conversation between the two individuals.
Christian, we're now going to go to more general questions. And again, considering just your tremendous background, what are your other interests and what are the broad applications and implications of your work?
My interests, goes to anything that surrounds or is related to the exponential technology. Now, I use that term a lot, but I think it's a very interesting one because in whichever field that you want to focus on, there is tremendous potential and impact. For example, 3D printing or artificial intelligence. This robotics, human augmentation, you name it. Depending on the field that one wants to focus on, many different ways of targeting particular diseases and worldwide problems can happen. So it's for me at this point in time, it's learning more about them and seeing how I can apply them to target particular problems. Now, once you start digging and getting into more subspecialized diseases, well, the number of people that you can impact becomes less. So the goal right now for me, which is a very big interest, is how to use all this data, which people call big data, that may come from different sensors, wearables, your smartphone, and how to use all this information to avoid the patient from getting sick. And this will come from merging these different technologies, creating a platform, merging it, and maybe even putting it with gamification. I mean, that's why you see in social media platforms. It's basically creating a world in which all this information will help the patient achieve their goals in a fun way. You can ask a patient to exercise every day, to go running every day. But at the end, it becomes a routine. And when it becomes a routine, well, you lose that fun factor. And I think when we start incorporating all these different technologies into the life and use it properly in addition to a gamification process, my hope is that this will promote or make the individual want to become healthier. And yes, there's many platforms and startups out there trying to do this, but I don't think anybody has found the right formula at this point in time. So another thing you can say, well, I mean, you're in interventional cardiology. Shouldn't you be focusing initially on creating more devices? Well, there's times to this. There's different phases in somebody's life to create things. And I think initially learning on the preventive part is a good and excellent introduction on how to impact. And then once you do that, then you can come to the next step and start looking for more ambitious projects as your knowledge starts increasing in every field possible, be it in medicine, technology, and all the other areas around the exponential technologies.
You know, just a fascinating. Again, Christian, what are your most difficult challenges and what valuable lessons do you wish to share?
I think the most challenging in medicine is innovation, or at least that's what it has been for me. Throughout residency, throughout fellowship, I've always had this idea, and after speaking with people from seeing it at the university and getting more involved with different technologies out there and trying to see how I can implement them to create apps, devices, you name it, in order to benefit patients. I've tried a couple. I've tried several, actually, from platforms that go inside the hospital in a social way that enables patients to speak with doctors in a better manner, or sensors to detect possible heart attacks and attend in a faster way to the hospital and get PCI done. It's challenging when you start or you want to innovate in the medical setting, because there's so many rules, legalities, lawsuits and implications that it's just not having a great idea. A great idea is as good as its execution. And you might have the good idea, but you assembled the wrong team, then it's not going to work. Or maybe it sounds like a great idea, but it's not an idea that is going to be feasible. So that has been one of the greatest challenges, finding the idea that is worth pursuing, because even though it may sound great, the feasibility of it being developed is not good, or finding the right people to develop it and you didn't choose the right one. So I think that's what's been the most challenging to me. And learning, and you learn from maybe you want to call them failures, but failures give you experience. And those failures have been what has been the challenging part in innovation in medicine. They have given me a lot of insight, and slowly but surely we're getting somewhere. So yeah, that's what I would say.
Now, looking back over your remarkable career so far, what do you see as your valuable experiences, again, historically, and then lessons you want to share from that past experiences?
That's very obvious, and I remember throughout my career always saying, wow, I was lucky. But then somebody told me, well, the harder you work, the luckier you get. And I think that has been my quote, because hard work always pays. So be it with my research at the Methodist Hospital and finding this anticardic antibodies in patients with heart failure, which right now is still has led to ongoing projects, that all came from countless hours in the lab, being there in the weekends. It was extremely challenging and situation when I was there, because I went alone to Houston. My family stayed back in Mexico, and it was a new environment. And work at that point in time is what I had, and that's what I invested most of my time in. And the hard work did pay off, and it led to wonderful projects, wonderful findings that are still key to ongoing research. Another thing would be when you really feel passionate and strongly about something, never doubt yourself. Throughout my career, once again, as I mentioned, I did have my failures, but from failures I gained insight, and some of those failures, maybe I should have pursued them a little bit more. I was naive enough to listen to people when they told me, well, this cannot be done, this has no sense, this makes no sense. And when you're younger, and somebody with, more years to their knowledge tells you that this cannot be done, well, you start questioning yourself. And I think I've learned not to question myself anymore. If I think that it's worth pursuing, I go ahead and do it. And recently, it's proven to me that when I really focus and avoid the negative comments and you really pursue your passion, great things start happening. Maybe you don't end up developing the product that you wanted to, but you will end up meeting the right people. You will end up knowing and learning and getting excited and having more ideas about a particular project. So never doubt yourself is something that it's hard to do without a doubt, but it's very important to always stay strong. And if you feel strongly about it, do not let anyone dissuade you from that pathway. I also believe in paying it forward. be as friendly as possible, treat everyone with fairness and equality. I think, and I truly believe, what goes around comes around. That has led to wonderful things in every place that I have worked at. Speak and make friends with anyone. You never know where that idea will come from. A med student, for example, he can have an amazing and tremendous idea. Do not think that because he's just starting his career, he cannot provide you with tremendous knowledge. So anybody can help you develop the next big or great thing in the world. And if somebody comes to you and is asking for your advice, go ahead and do it and help them every way you can. We all needed help at some point in our lives, and particular conclusions or resolutions would have changed if somebody just had taken the time to help you more in a particular issue. And that's why I strongly believe in the pay it forward. Another thing would be embrace the fear when you're innovating and you're creating something different. It might be in another field. I think in medicine it's more challenging. I remember when I was coming up with new ideas or concepts I wanted to develop, and there's always this fear, am I doing the right thing? Should I just stop focusing on this and completely focus on what medicine is supposed to be? And as time goes by, you start getting more comfortable with that fear. You start to suppress it, go ahead, do it, and deal with the fruits or issues that come after it. And I think one of the most important one at this point in time, and that goes for anyone, is to keep themselves open to career path changes. And what I say this is because you'll start seeing more of the automation process and job substitutions and being replaced by robots and artificial intelligence. And I think it's crucial for individuals to start thinking what makes you unique and what is your true passion, and if that true passion of yours can be replaced by a robot or artificial intelligence. For those that think that I might be exaggerating at this point in time, it's just a matter of looking and doing a web search of what is happening in different professions with this, and the necessity to not only have one good thing that you are at, but being able to mutate and say, I can do this, I can do that, this is my strong passion, I can use this thing that makes me unique to do this. Start exploring that, because by the way things are going, I think we're going to have a very exciting road ahead of us, but it's also going to be a very bumpy road to many people. And being able to decide or change your path without major conflicts is going to be very important. So I think those are some 5 valuable lessons that I would have.
You know, you've given so many lessons here in the last couple of questions. What then specific qualities do you think make you excel, and why?
Persistence. Persistence is for me the most important quality that I have. If you fall down, just get up, as cliche as it may sound. That's the way it is. One day it will work, one day it will not. You will run into a miserable day, and you just need to turn that miserable into a great day and a learning experience. There's always something to learn from bad situations. Obviously, nobody likes to live them. But there's always something that you can learn from them. Helps you mature, helps you with ideas. And if you fail, failure is not a bad word. That's something I learned in my recent conference that I've been in San Francisco. Failure is just a part of the innovation process. It's just a part of learning. It's just a part of who you will become. And if you embrace failure, then comes persistence. And basically, you never give up when you have a goal. You just keep going. And even though you persisting on a particular goal will not lead you to that goal being executed, it will lead you to other ideas, to other options, to other people, to other, you name it. So persistence is something crucial. Creativity and imagination. Some people can remember a whole book. Some people have amazing memory. That's not my case, but I have a very interesting creativity and imagination. And what I learned to do for myself is find those qualities that help me. And learning facts and tables has always been challenging and boring and annoying in my case. So I saw what were my strong points, and my strong point is creativity and imagination. But when you start thinking, how can creativity and imagination help you when you're a doctor? Well, you might stumble into an issue. But then what I realized is that creativity and imagination can lead to innovation, or will lead to innovation. So therefore, accepting and embracing innovation was just common nature to me. And so I've been doing it and experimenting with it, and that has led me to wonderful paths, meeting wonderful people. And I hope that in this very early stage in my career, it's just only going to grow. And that's another one. Hunger to achieve something. If you have the hunger to and desire to get to a particular goal, you will get there. You need to be hungry about something in life. If you're not, then you have to find it, because it's that hunger that keeps you going with your true passion. Another thing for me is my passion for technology and medicine. The incorporation of both in this era has become a very interesting combination, creating ideas that before were, I guess, unreasonable and sound like science fiction. Now it's something that is very feasible. And last but not least, a positive personality. Always stay positive. It's hard to do. I say always. I cannot say I always stay positive. It's challenging. It's depending on the environment that you are. But at least trying to remain positive. The most time is crucial in your life, because it affects your mood. It affects your work. It affects your relationships with everyone. And it's just a cycle. So there you go.
Well, those are just some amazing qualities that you've shared, and ones that the audience can aspire to. In terms of the people that you've admired over the years, perhaps in history currently or others, can you talk about those people who inspire you?
Well, I mean, I think it sounds a little bit cliche when you say, like, who has inspired you. But one of them, without a doubt, is my father. He's a very successful interventional cardiologist. He trained in the United States. He has done great things in medicine and cardiology. He always targets or aims for the best for the patient, for the best for his country. For the best for medicine. And that is without a doubt somebody that inspires me hugely. But if I start going for more people, I think inspiration does not come from an individual per se. Success is not a source of inspiration. It's the talent of an individual. You can find inspiration when you go walking in the street and you see a fabulous musician out there, which you cannot believe your ears when you're listening to the kind of music that he's creating. And then thinking, why is he here? Well, it all depends on the path that you take and the decisions that you make on what you do with your gifts. Inspiration can come from anywhere, not only an individual. It can come from a situation. It can come from anything. So I wouldn't say that there's a particular individual that inspires me, but more is when you can be inspired by when you go to the slums in some place and you see a kid who's struggling when he's being bullied, for example, and he just keeps going and going and becomes a successful individual. That right there for me is a huge source of inspiration. Why? Well, you can do a metaphor of what that bullying means, and we face it in our professions every day. When you are an outside of a box thinker, and when you want to do things differently, you push in different ways, and you will face obstruction. You will face a lot of hassles and obstacles, and keep going, and that is whichever situation you face, just keep doing it. So I will not say that there's a particular individual that inspires me. I just get inspired by many individuals, and I think that's a beautiful thing.
You have the opportunity to meet really fascinating people. You've had this amazing career yourself and continue to do so. You continue to innovate. Is there anything that kind of surprises you?
Oh, yeah. I don't understand how it is that we have so much of an extreme between the rich and the poor and not being able to do more for them. With all the technologies that are coming, yes, I think we're starting to see a change in the way that that we try to help those that are not as lucky as us. It just seems to me that with all this technology that we have out there, that we could be doing a little bit more for those in need than we are. I'm spurred in the subject, but it's a feeling that I have, and that is something that surprises me. Maybe if I look, of course, there's a lot of people doing great things for these individuals, but I think we can do more. To a certain extent, that is something that I'm trying to do initially with, or we are trying to do initially with Curely, hoping to establish a platform in which we can do more for others, trying to get doctors to not only use Curely because they want to make money, but because also they want to help others. So, of course, I mean, making money is not selfish. A doctor also has to feed his family, has to pay the bills. But we all have that desire and sense of satisfaction and happiness when we are able to impact the life of another individual. And I'm just surprised that I speak with many doctors and they don't seem that happy, you know. I'm just hoping that with Curely or with another platform or another thing that I will be able to create in the near future, that we can do more for another individual and hopefully make this a better place.
Now, you're involved with Curely, you're involved with innovation, you have your medical career. Is there something that you want to do next that maybe it's just, would be outside of the sort of thinking of most people? Or?
Well, yeah, that's. I mean, for me, the next step for me is a very exciting one. And I could have chosen to finish now my training, go into practice, start working as an interventional cardiologist. But I just have something that I want to do more, you know. Yeah, one can accomplish great things as a doctor, be it in primary care, be it as in the hospitalist, be it as an interventional cardiologist, you name it. But I think there are ways that I can use my knowledge in a bigger scale. And that is one of the reasons why I am going to California. I feel privileged to go to the Fogarty Institute for Endovascular Fellowship at El Camino Hospital. I think I will. It's going to be a great interaction, which will merge my knowledge my medical knowledge with innovation and technology, give me opportunity to work with different industries, different individuals from different backgrounds, and see what comes from there. I have my life has been I have stumbled with so many changes in what I thought was my path that I cannot tell you in a year I'm going to be here or in a year I'm going to be working there or what. I just I'm pursuing right now a particular goal that I have in mind, and it's to with the ideas that I have, see which is the most feasible, which I'm working on to implement and create an impact in the world. And that is why I mentioned in one of your questions in the past to be open to change career paths, be able to mutate your profession and to become somebody that you never thought of. Right now, I'm very far in sub-specialized training, but at the end, if I find a way that I can create a greater impact of what I'm doing, I would not hesitate on changing my path. I love what I do. I love my career, and but I am open to new experiences. And if I believe that I can do more in a particular area that will change me to a certain extent of my original path, I'm okay with it. So where I'm going, I know where I'm going right now. I know where I'm going in the next year. What will happen after that? Well, that I don't know yet. If I end up in practice or in some place, I will always have the innovation side and the creativity and exploring new ideas, new concepts with me. Or if I end up working in a particular company, developing particular things, that might also happen. And it's always being with Curely will be my first attempt to this. We are doing great work with this. And who knows, if everything goes according to plan, Curely might be it. But we'll see. As I said, I'm open to anything.
Now, you're in a perfect position to look into your crystal ball and sort of forecast upcoming disruptive innovations. Can you talk about this?
Yeah, of course. Well, I think I mentioned them too much already, but there's something, I see a trend here. The trend that I see is something that has been discussed over the last 4 or 5 years. What is that? Well, big data. How do you get big data? Well, basically data is any information that you can get of a particular individual, be it an electronic medical record, be it his vital signs from the clinic, or maybe wearable sensors. The incorporation of wearable sensors. In 2013, there were like 22 million wearable devices generating like 1.7 petabytes of monthly traffic or something like that. So if you start seeing the amount of information that we are creating with the evolution of different wearable devices, once we start incorporating getting more information from those wearable devices, which could include biomarkers for cardiac state, be it worsening heart failure or being because of weird rhythms, or ischemic attacks, you name it, or you can be having an infection or all those things. There's many different ways that different researchers and scientists across the globe are working on with this wearables or implantables or digestibles, as you want to name it. But we're experiencing an era in which we are able to get more information from our bodies like we never been able to do before. Now, when you incorporate this information and you merge it with artificial intelligence, for example, what happens? Well, I will not get into much details, but I would recommend the audience to look how it is that artificial intelligence is growing. The acquisitions that are happening with the major artificial intelligence companies out there, how, for example, Baidu or Google are working on this project, and see what's in the past, how it's been progressing with from Watson, for example, how Watson is able to devour information in a matter of hours, graduate from medical school in about 4 or 5 days now. When you start incorporating wearable sensors, which basically is the data of the patient, to the knowledge of artificial intelligence, the diagnosis that can happen from that is truly amazing. Now, initially, doctors and other healthcare providers will be using this information to make the best diagnosis, best possible treatment. But that is initially. That could be in the next 10 years. But what happens as the exponential technologies keep with the trend that they are at this point in time? Will we get to a point in which artificial intelligence could be able to make the diagnosis and the treatment on its own? It is a possibility. I mean, for those that are not familiar with the subject, it might sound unlikely, but that's the thing. It sounds unlikely when you do not know what's going on out there and the way that things are going. It's just too fast to start assimilating it. And if one or an individual does not start doing it at this point in time, well, it's going to be just a shocking experience when he starts doing so in the next 2 or 5 years. Also, look at it in robotics, for example. You've got robotics, and why is this important? Well, in the last couple of months, Google has acquired 8 robotic companies. I mean, from the 12 companies that it had acquired, it was like 8 was from robotics. What does this mean? Okay, well, they're investing in wearable sensors. They're investing in artificial intelligence. They're investing in robotics. That's not only Google. That's other companies out there. But what I'm trying to say is, where is this going to? And this goes back to be able to mutate and find what is unique of you. Why? Well, when you get all this information, you get artificial intelligence, and you get the wearable sensor in robotics, then what happens next is the automation of your job. It's happening already, and it will continue doing so. And if you think your profession is safe from it, not even doctors are safe from it. So that's something very important to have in the back of our minds. And just learn and assimilate and read about what's going on. Inform yourself on this, which I think is very important. Next thing goes, well, 3D printing. 3D printing in the next 5 to 10 years will have huge impact on many different levels, from construction, to all the way to medicine. And how to medicine? Well, you start seeing medical tools being printed. You start seeing prostheses being printed. Instead of a prosthesis being worth $5,000, you can print it for $250. This is happening all over the world, in which a designer creates something like the RoboHand, for example, and starts helping kids with particular anatomical differences and implement them there. And when you start mixing the 3D printing with tissue engineering, well, then you go to a huge different field in which the leading names in this field, they start talking about tissue printing and organ printing, and there are data out there suggesting that a human heart could be printed in the next 10 years. Will this happen? Will it not? Well, all I can say is I don't say this is not happening, because we are all shocked with what technology and the exponential trends can do. And just saying that this will not happen, well, I guess it's just irresponsible at this point in time saying that it can happen. I think it's a very strong possibility, and that it can change completely the way that future transplants and procedures will be occurring. And just with those 5, I think they're one of the most disruptive innovations that you will be seeing. And obviously robotics and with the implementation and exoskeletons and basically human augmentation is something that you'll see. And even in the World Cup, I think there's news about this paraplegic individual which will be kicking a ball with exoskeleton. So I think very exciting times are ahead of us in many fields. And it's just, well, learning about them, informing what the potentials are, and, hey, even dreaming on what you can do with this type of technology in your daily life. And if you have something, well, use social media out there to find the right individuals to create what it is that you envision.
You know, it's interesting, your sort of predictions of where it's going to go and some of the innovations that are going to come up. You're also connected with Singularity University. Do you have regular meetings with the founders?
No, I do not. I usually speak with the chair, which is Daniel Kraft, and we talk about Well, basically the subjects that we end up curating, and be it in the Google Plus community or in the Flipboard magazine or these subjects. I mean, regular meetings at this point in time, no. I have spoken with Daniel Kraft, and I will evaluate the we're currently like evaluating the possibility of creating maybe like Exponential Med meetings or hackathons once or twice a month over there, since I'm going to Mountain View at this point in time. And these hackathons could target solving problems in that have great impact. So the way this works is usually you get people together from different backgrounds and you mention a particular problem, and the goal is to solve that problem in a week and in 48 hours. And but these are ideas. These are conversations that I have had. Nothing formal at this point in time. But yeah, I mean, I have a relationship with and speaking with them every time I can.
Now, there's all sorts of policies both in the U.S. and internationally. Do you like to see some changes in policy?
It's hard because every country has their policies. Every country, when something needs to change, they have to go through a whole different level of regulations, which all those regulations, into the way I see it, they just they're obstacles to progress. At this point in time, the way that our technology, our science, our research is growing, or it's in evolution, is in a fast, quicker pace than what our laws are able to handle. We will have the technology to have great impact on many different levels, but the regulations and the laws out there are not ready for those changes. Just think about it. Well, what happens if you have the technology to be able to detect different labs from a patient, and you have all his data, his vital signs, and you can see that individual in your screen? I mean, most likely, I can guarantee you that many doctors are able to give a particular diagnosis with the labs by looking at the patient. There's a physical part from this, but there's ways around that. I mean, if you have somebody in the other field, or if you have a gadget that is able to detect the particular vital signs. I mean, we can already auscultate patients with different devices. I mean, you can listen to his heart, you can listen to his lungs, you can check his labs, you can look what he looks like. If we go in a further discussion and say, well, you're missing a lot of the physical exam, well, true, but it depends on what it is that you're actually consulting the patient for. And I guarantee you that in most cases, with information that I just mentioned that can be provided, somebody can be giving an excellent diagnosis with an excellent treatment with a particular medication that he needs. And even more so if that information is added to what could be like a cloud data or information about this patient's, I don't know, genetics or previous history, we can find exactly what is a medication that will be working for him. Using data around him, we can find what is a bug that is most resistant to a particular treatment and why we should not be giving that medication. So it's turning into a way that we need to incorporate all these technologies, and we could be offering excellent treatment, for example, in telemedicine. Now, for that to happen, well, there's too many hassles. There's too many blockages that need to be targeted, and that comes with knowledge. People need to learn what technology and medicine can do when they're merged, when they're placed together, and visualize how these limitations are actually causing more harm than good when we try to get a patient to speak with a doctor someplace else and get a particular diagnosis. there's too many things that happen here. I'm not saying that the way the laws are implemented at this point in time are wrong. I'm just saying that they will need to change. They will need to adapt to the quick pace of how technology is changing in order for us to be able to use it in the most efficient manner possible.
You travel extensively. You have a varied career. You've done quite a bit of different types of work in different domains and so on. So you must have some story that you can share, maybe one or two of them that are amazing or surprising, unexpected, and so on.
Stories that I think they are interesting, that I remember my reaction. It was first of all the discovery of the anti-cardiac antibodies. That was a really interesting story, because after 3 months of being in the lab, going there on weekends, and trying different stains views and experiments, I finally stumbled on something which was spotting this staining. Imagine if a myocyte, imagine it as different circles put together, and then when I was looking at the immunohistochemistry in the microscope, and I see just this glowing of all these myocytes out there. So when I started seeing that, I'm like, what's going on here? I mean, in the 3 months that I've been here, I've never seen this before. So I had to go back on my steps and see what exactly it was that I did. And then what I spotted was that I had used an anti-human, anti-cardiac antibody. And it was when I realized that I had found an antibody that was present in the patients with heart failure. So the next thing was to check on the normal hearts that we had in the laboratory. And we had normal hearts because those were hearts that were aimed to be used as transplant, but for some reason or the other, they could not be used. And when I checked them and finding a 0% presence of this antibody in normal hearts and 70% in heart failure, and looking at that, that was a pretty interesting and exciting experience, without a doubt. And the other one was another experience that happened recently, was actually using and implementing LAS in the hospital. I knew what was going to happen, obviously. they look at you when you're initially wearing them like a weird lab rat, which, well, they look weird, I know, but it was an interesting experience. But as time went by and explaining to different individuals on the potential and how it can be used, and then finally using it and creating the first publications in medical journals about the potential was exciting. And finally, it led to a case in which we showed for the first time the proof of concept on the potential of wearable technology like LAS in medicine. And this was with a patient that we did a closure of a connection that existed between the two upper chambers of the heart. We were transmitting this live to an expert, and he was with us virtually. When we were doing the procedure, we were transmitting the case, and in the case we saw a thrombus or a clot in a part of a device that we were using, and basically he was seeing that, he was guiding us on the procedure and removing it and putting it back. Of course, we knew how to do it, but it was just the proof of concept in which the advice of an individual could be helping a doctor, which is in a remote location, be performing a procedure with now what seems to be a very easy and light device. So I think those were two interesting stories and experiences I've had lately in medicine.
Do you have any additional life goals you want to achieve?
I guess something I realized is that the amount of time that goes to my passions and to my work. But my goal, my first goal, is to be the best husband and father I can become. Family is the first in my book, and to a certain extent, what I do in my passion and my work is to provide the best quality of life to my family. Now, it's a very interesting balance or equilibrium between those, which I'm still trying to figure out. But that is something that I'm that I would say it's my most important goal, and to enjoy life at the fullest. Having said that, I have a tremendous passion to develop applications, services, or devices that have the potential to impact not only 1, 2, or 100 people, but 1,000 or even millions of people. That is my life goal, and I don't want it to be one idea that has the potential to do this. It's a very ambitious thing to say it. But I think that is what brings me the most satisfaction. I get tremendous satisfaction when I see a patient and I'm able to help them, either in my clinic or in the cath lab or doing a procedure and solving an issue that he has had for quite a problem and improving his quality of life. But I can only dream of what it would like to be able to impact the lives of thousands or millions of people and get them a better quality of life. And that is one of the reasons why Curely was born. It's one of many, many ideas and concepts.
Now, you choose the topic area. Are there any other challenges, even, let's say, outside of medicine, that you think are facing us today and you think needs to, we need to put some attention to?
The biggest challenge that I can see is the automation of jobs, as I mentioned. This is something that I'm seeing a growing trend, and I think other individuals have seen it. You've got from driverless cars to the artificial intelligence being mixed with robots, robots creating robots. It's concerning. How can you compete with an artificial intelligence that is able to retain 100% of what it reads, what it digests? It's an overwhelming experience. You have, for example, something that obviously comes to mind is when we talk about life expectancy. You've got, for example, the Avatar project, or you've got Project Calico, in which they aims to defeat death or increase your lifespan as most as possible. So my concerns are, okay, what happens when you start increasing your lifespan for more than 50 years or more than that, 200 or whatever you may? I mean, this is what different companies and scientists are working on at a point in time. And, well, my thing is, how do you compete with a mastermind that has 200 years? Well, how do you compete with a business that is so strong that you are basically, let's call it even a cockroach compared to it? I mean, they develop so much power at the particular point in time that I'm just curious on what it is or how it's going to be. I mean, if you talk about monopolies in different fields, how can you compete with the knowledge that these individuals might be developing with 50 years more of experience, or 100 or 120, or you name it? Now, if you go to the Avatar project, which is something, is a project basically dealt with by a lot of investors and billionaires and one of the most powerful people in the world. And it says by 2045, it aims to have an hologram with a knowledge of an uploaded brain. If you want to call that hologram with artificial intelligence an individual, well, that's beyond the scope. What I'm just saying is, when you have this entity that has that knowledge accumulated, how do you compete with it? How do the young ones compete with them? And that is a challenge, which brings me to the next question. How are we raising our kids? We are teaching them like they were taught 50 years ago, like I was taught. And honestly, I'm not sure that that's the way to go. I think that the way that these little guys are being taught needs to change a little. I'm no expert on the field, but it just if I see my friends, I see people that are younger than I am, and I tell them about what exponential technologies can do, where they're going, what they're doing right now, and when I say what's happening at this point in time, they think that is basically sci-fi, and it's not. It's been going on. So if them, which are 10 years younger than I am, or five or whatever, they just don't see it. Well, there's a gap there. They should know what's coming, because they're going to be affected tremendously in the future. So educating themselves on what this can be, on the tremendous impact of different technologies in our life, what's going to happen. As I said, it's a tremendously exciting time that's coming, but we need to know and inform ourselves with what it is, and just keeping an eye on its evolution, because as we all know, it's increasingly becoming more and more rapid and substantial. So those are topics that I think they're very important for anybody, no matter of their field.
Well, we're down to our last question, and this is where I turn the tables, and it's often a very difficult question to be asking you. Is there one question that you would have asked yourself, and then what would be your answer?
I think a question that many people ask me in this field, and it goes back to something I've mentioned many times, and is it comes to a concept of what Vinod Khosla said a couple of years ago, and that is machines replacing doctors, or computers or robots replacing doctors. And, well, I will answer the question with some just knowledge, and that is, if you can have a computer that can devour the medical literature, including all of your med school, in a couple of days, and know everything that is happening with you, from your mood, from that come from your social media updates, from your vital signs that come from the different wearable technology that you can find, be it a shirt that can measure your 12 EKG constantly, be it a bracelet that can measure your pulse or your galvanic response, be it an implantable sensor that can measure your labs, that can measure your white count, see if they have an infection, see if there's an increased inflammatory markers, cardiac enzymes. Once you put everything together and your body as a whole is being analyzed, like the dashboard analyzes a car, wouldn't it be obvious that a computer can spot the problem even quicker than you calling the doctor and having an appointment in 5 days? So it's the tremendous knowledge that this artificial intelligence can start digesting and making sense of that brings me to the possibility. Yes, I agree with what people say. And they say, well, this is not here to substitute doctors. Well, that is at this point in time. But what will happen in 10 years when this matures 100 times even more and it exponentially increased its capacity to digest and make sense of information? With the new tools of microfluidics and different sensors and wearables and digestibles can actually help this entity make a diagnosis. So there's just too much information which can be digested in a matter of seconds that it could take us days to make sense of. So I think that is a question that I would have asked. And I say that I would not say it's not happening. I would say, let's put it, it's likely. It's a possibility. And it's, in my book, a real feasible one. Now, what will laws, regulations, and ethics say about this? Well, that's yet to come. That depends on the progressive thinkers of our leaders at this point in time.
Well, Christian, you've given us some food for thought, and I guess it ties in with, you know, you see the work of David Bly or Tom Mitchell, Andrew Ng, Judea Pearl, and others, and it sort of touches on some of the things that you talked about in terms of the possibilities and the work that they're currently doing. Christian, I know your schedule is demanding. It took some time to get a spot where you weren't handling some kind of emergency. So thank you again for coming in today and sharing your experiences with our audience.
Thank you. It was a real pleasure. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and this concludes our exclusive interview with Christian Assad, CMO for Curely, an internationally award-winning doctor, entrepreneur, and innovator. Okay, that's it. Thank you so much.
Thank you, and have a good one.
Okay, you too. Take care.
Bye. You too.
Goodbye.